been there for years because it takes me that long to drink a half a bottle of wine. But I took one bottle and I poured myself a normal half glass, which is all I would ever usually have at one time. Well, I went back in the living room and I became engrossed in my work. But the craving of taste in my mouth did not subside. So when I finished the wine, I more or less absentmindedly just got up and went in and poured some more, and some more, and some more, and pretty soon the bottle was empty. So I started on the second bottle, which was also partially filled. Well, after about 4 or 5 hours, I finally finished my work, and I took my mind off it then for the first time in hours and stood up, and lo and behold, I almost fell right over on my face. I was dead drunk. I hadn't noticed how drunk I was because I was so engrossed in my work, but now I could hardly stand up. In fact, it was all I could do to stagger into the bedroom and just flop on the bed and sleep it off. But so what? I was by myself. There was a chain on the door of the apartment, the one door to the apartment. No one could get to me to take advantage of my situation, and I wasn't going anywhere to possibly interfere with anybody else. I could sleep it off the next morning because my work was done. In other words, there were no evil consequences to be had from the act. Now, consider the difference if I had been somewhere else. Suppose I had been at a friend's house, making a drunken fool of myself, with a 20-mile drive in order to get home. There's no point in saying I ought to be able to think clearly and drive well with wine. Other people do it or say they can. I can't, and that is the reality of the situation. And what would happen if I were stopped by a policeman who simply wanted to tell me that my taillight wasn't working or something of the sort? What would happen to me as a result of my condition? But within the apartment, with the chain on the door, the framework was correct. I had nothing to fear from the matters that would have been horrible consequences to me if I had been outside of that framework. My action was not limited. I did not have to act as people think of it, as looking intellectually at every situation and saying, well, now I will not find myself in that condition, etc., etc. I could let my hair down. I could be anything I wanted to be within the right framework. There was no vulnerability. Now, obviously, there are other considerations that I haven't named here, but the illustration serves, I believe, to demonstrate what I mean by a perfect framework. And that is what you are striving for, not absolute perfection of action. You want to construct the framework within which you can make mistakes, in which you're free to pursue your emotions as you feel them, and so forth. But the framework must be constructed in advance, not after you have gotten yourself in the situation. Now, before the break, let's examine one more attribute that can sometimes be mistaken for the purpose of your actions. And this is self-esteem, which, of course, is different from reputation. But both of them are means and not ends. And self-esteem is a term that can very easily be tossed around loosely to give the impression that it is life's most important goal. But I don't believe that it would hold up under close examination. What is self-esteem? Well, it is normally defined as satisfaction with one's own character. But on what basis is one satisfied or dissatisfied with his own character? By what standard? Is it an arbitrary decision that will be made? Obviously, one can only be proud of his actions if those actions do live up to some kind of a predefined standard. But what standard? What someone else said that I ought to be? We've already seen that that won't hold up. Well, what I believe I ought to be. But how do I believe what I ought to be? How have I arrived at something in particular and said that this is what I ought to be as a human being? How do I arrive at the choice? Suppose I rigorously investigate the nature of life and construct a formula depicting what I believe a perfect man ought to be, and then strive to live up to that standard. When I do, I feel self-esteem, pride in myself for having lived up to this standard. But how does this differ from someone else who has much less rigorously decided what he wants in life and feels that he lives up to it? Suppose he says he has self-esteem from being a drunken fool, you know, the kind of guy that goes into his apartment and drinks wine. And more important, just what is my reward for having lived up to all the Stoic virtues? Well, of course, what's happening here is that I'm simply chasing my tail in a circle, trying to make an end out of a means, because there is no way you can do it. Self-esteem presupposes a higher standard to which the self-esteem is a reward for having lived up to it. So let me offer you a concept of self-esteem that I think makes more sense. Life is a search to find the maximum state of well-being. To get there, the individual is going to have to make plans and have ideas and hopes and standards.